Automation is often coming from the top down, at least in my experience, right? The owner, the partner, the person who's focused on improving the margins, growing the business, retaining employees.
Welcome to BYFIQ, where we talk about business financial literacy, explore strategies for profitability, and unlock the power of finance so you can make more money in business. I hope you enjoy and subscribe. Let's talk about this whole idea of finance automation, because like as a CFO and as I go out there in the world and I teach this whole concept of strategic financial leadership, the big part of that is financial leaders, they have to create margin in their jobs, like time margin specifically. Because if you're so caught up in the compliance side of the business, the transactional side of the business, you're not going to have time to, get into data analysis or strategic thinking or whatever it may be, where the true value is created in the organization, because you're just so bombarded with like the daily grind and the close process and the reconciliations and just all the other tasks that are constantly pressuring people in FinOps. So I'm excited to talk about this. So let me ask you, Tom, like when you're talking to entrepreneurs out there, business owners or people in FinOps, I mean, what are you seeing and what are you telling them, and how do you give them hope for a better life and just better efficiency in FinOps overall?
Yeah, for sure. It's a great question. I think about finance automation, it's such a broad spectrum at this point, right? There's all of these little sub markets that have popped up and sub markets below those that are popping up, right? Like finance automation could refer to, FP&A tools and forecasting platforms, right? There's also a lot of AP automation, accounts payable automation for bills, accounts receivable automation, right? For invoicing your customers and for following up. There's accounting automation. And we even think that there's a subsection of accounting automation that kind of breaks out accounting practice automation, like a lot of those really great practice management and workflow management tools that exist. Mm-hmm. And then accounting automation, which we really think we're playing in, which is how do we actually automate journal entries? How do we reduce the actual accounting work being done? And, I often speak with people who are frankly overwhelmed by the amount of options out there. All they hear is, I need to be embracing automation. And then they hear about this nice new shiny toy called AI. And they go, where do I start? What happens? So for anyone that I talk to that's exploring it, it really starts with like, hey, what's repetitive that you're doing? Where's the pain point, right? Is it very repeatable? Is the data structured? Right. And then let's talk about where's the best place to start with automation. Jesse, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that too.
Well, I mean, I think that you, Steve, I think you really nailed it with this concept of creating margin, mm-hmm. right, with your time. How do you do that? I think the temptation is, well, I'm not going to care about the accounting. I'm going to focus high level on the strategic.
Right.
To me, the key is to care about it and get a good system in place, which does take time up front. I think of it as capital time, but it pays dividends down the road when you want to use a strong accounting system to do the analysis that you're really being paid for.
Yeah, exactly. And what I find is that in most organizations, either the data is structured horribly,
yep.
or you're not doing, true accrued accounting, so you have like expenses all over the place and you're looking at things from a cash basis. Or, the other issue that I see with these companies is that beyond that, they don't have the structure of their financials matching the economic reality of the business. And what I mean by that is they have things that should be up in cost of goods sold, like direct labor, and it's just lumped all together down below in just this, payroll line item. And it's like, you're looking at your gross margin and you're saying, wow, look at our business. We have like a 70% gross margin. And it's like, yeah, because your material costs are down below and your labor is down below, your direct labor. Add those things back up into cost of goods sold and look at your true gross margin. Oh, look at, you're actually operating at a 15% margin. And for the industry, it's 35%. So you're running your business terribly in some form or fashion, but you can't understand the story behind the numbers because you don't even have the right structure in place. What are your thoughts on that with like data structure, the structure of financial statements and just the overall general ledger?
I think it is the crux. Unfortunately, I don't think it's a once and done fix either. I think you get it right for the questions you think you want to answer now. When you're very experienced, you can set it up intelligently, anticipating the questions you're going to want to ask later. But often I think it's a continually iterative process that over time becomes very masterful. Mm-hmm. But you got to start by, hey, we'll use this field to encapsulate this. We'll use class to encapsulate that. Does this answer the questions we want? If not, we got to rethink it. Might have to go back and rebook a couple periods.
Yeah. And it goes back to what you said earlier, Jesse, where, you know, some people may say, look, I'm going to step out of the day-to-day grind and I'm going to think, you know, more strategically and just act more high level in 2024 and beyond. And the danger in that is, like, if you're not managing the data, if it's not being structured, if it's not going in correctly, we all know it's garbage in, garbage out. And then you're sitting here making strategic decisions, but the underlying data is not, you know, supporting that decision-making, and you can really get into a lot of trouble. What are your thoughts on that, Tom or Jesse?
I mean, it's you know, you want to be in the penthouse, you want to be at the top, you want to be at the top of the pyramid doing the strategy. But if the foundation is broken or whittled, right, the entire building is going to collapse. And I think that there's, you know, especially in terms of automation, you think about it as a pyramid, the bottom, there's a lot of like transactional kind of apps out there, right? Hey, this will reduce time on AP, reduce time on AR, reduce time on bank recs. And at the top, it's let me show you this data in a really, really pretty format that's going to make you feel good because it's got a round button and nice color scheme. If you ignore that middle section, which is making sure that things are in the right period or hitting the right accounts from an accounting perspective, not just from like a categorization perspective, you're going to lose sight of everything, right? Yeah. And I think it's easy for people to say, I get the top and the bottom and the middle is kind of ugly, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. It's uncomfortable to take a hard look at some of those things that you're calling out about, like, is it sitting on the right place or in the right place on my financial statements?
Absolutely. Jesse, let me ask you this. Where do you think is the biggest upside when it comes to automating the whole finance function? I mean, you started this company, so obviously you had some type of thesis in mind, but where do you think businesses can just capture immediate upside by automating?
It's a big answer and a small answer. I want to say the monthly close, AP and the monthly close, right? Expense mm-hmm. management and journal entries that have to be booked at month end. And, you know, I think to sort of integrate the point that Tom just made, the best CFOs that I know, the people in the corner office, are willing to, at times and when necessary, get in there and book some entries so that they deeply understand the bookkeeping system and where the biggest wins lie. It's going to vary by business, but the answer is it depends where the biggest bottleneck is. What takes the most time to book the journal entries? That's the biggest win. Start with that. Don't just buy automation because it's flashy or they raised a ton of money. Does it solve my problems? I have to book monthly accruals. I have to, you know, do commissions, whatever your business, whatever takes the most time, that's where you want to start.
Yeah. And what I found is that, you know, in this whole process, and a lot of tech is still early stage, and there's just so many nuances when it comes to financial technology. There's so many nuances. It's like, okay, we do this process over here, but Sally, she has a side process because she doesn't get the report from Australia. So she has to put it in the system. And then there's like this exception. And so what I found is that when trying to automate certain parts of the finance function, we would get down the path and be like 90% there. And then it's like, ah, dang it. You know, like we're missing this one field or we're missing this one thing. And therefore, like, it's not going to feed into our system as beautifully as we thought. And okay, well, we're just going to have to manage this part over here in an Excel spreadsheet. And then it's like, well, dang it. You know, like, sure, it's a little bit more efficient, but now we have this other thing too, because it's not fully integrated. What are your thoughts on that? And what do you see when it comes to integration as like big bottlenecks or big issues that companies run into?
I think both of us in our previous jobs, I started FinOptimal because part of my job as a controller and as a CFO was to execute on all these processes and to get strategic insights. So when I build a system to facilitate something, I'm always shooting for full automation. Right. The second that what you just described, right? I typically call it a satellite schedule. Right. If the second there's a satellite schedule orbiting the planet of your, you know, what you want to be a full automation, you're introducing the you know, human error. You're introducing a delay until the person, I am typically much more willing to make compromises on the precision to achieve the full automation.
Sure.
Right. It's just better if you don't, if it's a set it and forget it situation.
Yeah, I agree. And so what's the balance there? You just touched on something really important. You know, what's the balance when it comes to accounting? Because some accountants are like green shade wearing in the back office and they're like, if I don't get this receipt, I'm not closing the books. And it's like, well, yeah, the receipt's for like $52. Like, seriously, you're going to like hound this general manager over here and not close the books, you know, because you don't have that receipt. Like, close the books, like do an accrual entry. Who cares?
Totally.
Versus like, you know, you can't just be super high level and not manage the details. So what are your thoughts on like balancing that, that precision and just that accuracy and timeliness and everything else?
I think you know it when you see it. Like we've definitely seen plenty of books where the chart of accounts is so sprawling that you know it's impossible to get any real insight, because every time you categorize something, you're choosing between six different accounts that it could be. And then you've got like expenses that are all T&E spread across six different accounts, right? And you know whoever's keeping that set of books is being too rigorous. That's slowing them down. They're not saving themselves enough time to analyze and to think. And on the other hand, sometimes you see, you know, QuickBooks files that have half of their expenses in general or miss, like miscellaneous, right? Yep. Those are the two extremes of dysfunction, right? Too meticulous, too careless. And I think everything in the middle is being, you know, don't let perfect be the enemy of better. You do need to close the books. I typically value quick before I value precise. But when it's too imprecise or it takes too long, everybody knows.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about materiality on our former podcast. And Jesse at one point defined it as, if you're trying to explain something to your boss or your CEO and they're saying, I don't care, why are you still talking about this? Then it's probably immaterial, right? Yeah. And that's like a good gut check of like, should I care about this or not? If you went to the leader of the company and said, well, they didn't give me a $52 receipt, so I haven't closed the books yet, they'd say, what are you talking about? We have $5 million in the bank, close the books, right?
And I'd go so far as to say for your listeners, because I've seen a lot of QuickBooks files, people tend to err on too much categorization. Sure. They're using class and department and customer, and then they're encoding special. And we, you know, we love that when it really makes sense, but usually when you add that many dimensions to your bookkeeping system, you're creating a categorization task that you then dread, don't do, and ultimately pay the price because the books never get done.
So I think that's a symptom of, that's a symptom of, I think, big four auditors taking a jump from big four auditing to being a startup accountant and never living in that middle ground and just trying to apply that same meticulousness to startup level books. At least that's a common thread in what I've seen.
No, I agree. And I've seen that too. It's like they're using the GL to try to break up different classes. And so you'll have, you know, marketing expense for South, marketing expense for North, marketing expense, you know, they'll have their chart of accounts basically repeated four times instead of using the other thing. But then you could also get into the nesting on nesting and nesting. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's like click this category, this sub, this sub, this sub. And, but I think that the key thing here is, you know, too many organizations, they're not closing their books fast enough. So going back to Jesse's point with like AP, obviously that's a nightmare for a lot of companies. Closing the books, I've seen companies close their books 6 weeks later. They're having these financial meetings with their executives and they're saying, hey, let's talk about November. You're like, November? Dude, it's January. Like, I don't even know what the heck I did in November. And, you know, you're trying to make business decisions. And if you look at a business, like you guys know, like the biggest expense is typically labor. Right. Yep. And a lot of companies, they're not in the business of selling their products and services. Oftentimes they're like in the business of managing labor. So if you think about like a construction company, for example, they may think that they're in the business of building buildings, but really they're in the business of managing their labor pool. They have thousands of employees working 2,000 hours a year. And it's like, you're off by $1. Like, let's just say you have, you know, 200,000 labor hours a year that you're selling to your customers by, you know, performing this service, and you're off by $1 because you're not closing the books. You don't understand your cost and you're so busy just like doing the grind. That's 200 grand in loss just by like being off by $1. So with all this, I think this is great. If somebody's listening to this though, Tom and Jesse, they may be thinking, okay, where do I even start? And like, what does this actually look like? When you say automation and you're talking about QuickBooks, for example, is it like in QuickBooks, there's a special button that you can make appear and it says, book these entries? Or is it like this another software tool that resides on the desktop and, you know, you got to get on Susie's computer to link this stuff? And how does it all work? Because it could be really a black box and really prevent people from taking those next steps.
For sure. I think the way to start, you know, automation is often coming from the top down, at least in my experience, right? The owner, the partner, the person who's focused on improving the margins, growing the business, retaining employees, hears about it at a conference and says, I want to automate in our business. And sometimes they think about it in a silo. The most important way to approach it and the most successful way to approach it, in my opinion and in my experience, is to really have like a brainstorming session with all levels of people within the company, right? Let's just sit around and say, what are the parts of our job that we spend the most time on, that are the most frustrating, and just get those on paper, right? And then let's rank those ideas. Of those, which are very repeatable, which have structured data, right? And which have sound business rules. If this happens, then do that, right? And then you can start to really narrow down the universe of potential ideas to automate. And then I think you measure the impact to the business if that thing is actually automated, right? So the ideas will often come from the junior and the middle level employees, and the ability to evaluate their impact is the middle and the high level employees. And then you start looking for apps, right? And I think when you start looking for apps and looking for automation, because there's 2 million apps out there all telling you they're going to save time, improve efficiency. It's the same semantic satiation, the same buzzwords thrown at you. So once you identify the pain points that you want to solve, that is where it needs to start, pain points. You evaluate and you go into those with, hey, these are my non-negotiables. Because automation does come in all different shapes and sizes. Browser extensions, people that will sell you on automation where it's really just like a bunch of janky little workflows that are going to break every 5 minutes, right? Yeah. Or full-blown apps or things that are honestly maybe a little bit too big for you. But if you don't know what you need, it's very easy to get overwhelmed and either bail or just say, I'm just going to pick this and go with it. I'm not sure if you were also asking about what we do and what our
apps. But I do want, like, let's just zoom out for a second. Most of the good apps out there, okay, Steve, like most of the apps your users are going to be considering are web apps that you sign up on, assuming they're using QuickBooks Online, which almost everybody should, not QuickBooks Desktop anymore, with some exceptions. We're talking about apps that have a website that connect to your QuickBooks account. Hey, do you give so-and-so permission to see your QuickBooks data? Mm-hmm. You configure the app and then it books journal entries for you. That's most good apps have that functionality. It should not be something on Susie's computer.
Sure.
Yeah, no VPN.
Never.
So, but what if somebody's like, okay, that's great, but the automation scares me, because let's just take payroll accrual, for example. Okay, I have this spreadsheet, I count the number of days that, you know, the payroll lands in December versus January. I come up with my numbers. I got to book it across 3 different GLs and 4 different classes. And I got this long journal entry and you're telling me, okay, I'm going to just automate that. Well, that's great. But how do you know that the automation doesn't go rogue and there's not human error in the automation? And then all of a sudden, like at the end of the year, you're like, oh crap, look at this line item on the balance sheet. This is a mistake. We got to reverse it. And now we just have a giant hit to the financial statements that we weren't expecting. What do you say to that?
The payroll in a different period is a great example, right? Hey, you're on biweekly payroll, you know, so you might get paid on January 2nd and some of that pay period needs to hit most of it needs to hit the December period, but 1 or 2 days needs to hit in January. It'd be great to not have to manually do that shift if you really care about monthly financials. A good app is going to make it set it and forget it, is going to book entries in a way that helps you. It leaves a trail of breadcrumbs in the memo, in the description. Hey, this shifts, right? The cash is going to move for the payroll on January 2nd, but we're going to book the entries to recognize the expense in December. And we're going to say this entry recognizes the expense of this payroll that hits on this date. And here's a link to the actual cash outflow. That's what I would consider a nice user-friendly automation that's easy to audit.
part of the things that we've built into our apps is like the concept of self-healing. And it's probably because, you know, Jesse built it and for himself first, used it, and then said, this made a mistake and now I need to fix it. How am I going to do that? So I think all of the things that we're building, and I'm sure other apps do this, but I know most don't, is how do we not only automate the process, but also automate the fixing process or the self-healing process? Because somebody is going to input the wrong information, or they're going to get the wrong information and input that information correctly, but still going to result in a mistake in the journal entry, right?
Yeah.
People, process, technology is the crux of all of this. No one app is going to solve anything. People that tell you that AI is just going to come and just take over accounting are frankly wrong, because you're always going to need that human element keeping an eye on it, right? It's not that you are out of the process. You're just watching it instead of doing it. I think that's the key when thinking about what does automation mean for me and my business?
No, I agree. And I think that it frees up time for investing in like financial intelligence. And I think it, you know, to answer like my own question, and along those lines, piggyback on what you guys said, look, if you're looking at your payroll numbers and you have historicals going back 3 to 5 years, you say, and you put it in a trailing 12-month trend or whatever, and you have it graphed out. Well, obviously if the journal entry is making a mistake, you're going to be like, what the heck, you know, labor went from, you know, 42% to like 58. You're like, we didn't hire any new employees. We're not working more overtime. Something's going on. And then you can go and pinpoint it. So I think that's another thing. It gives you more time to like understand the story behind the numbers and invest in that intelligence, which helps you make better decisions and drive greater value. I think that's key. So let me wrap up with this last question. So somebody's thinking about this, like, okay, I should invest in automation. I'm not going to hold you to anything. Let's say I'm a $1 million company, do $1 million in revenue. Like, yeah, it's me. I have a bookkeeper on staff. She's overwhelmed and I need to automate this. Like, how much am I looking to spend for this $1 million company? And then what about for, you know, the $10 million company, and they have a few people in accounting, they have, you know, maybe a controller, fractional CFO or whatever, full-time CFO. And they're like, okay, we want to automate. What are we looking at here as far as like initial upfront investment?
That's a great question. So you're thinking, hey, we're going to spend some money on a one-time basis to try to infuse some automation. $10,000.
Okay. So it's not like $100,000.
1% of revenue. I guess I'm thinking 1% of revenue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would often think, like when I talk to a more, you know, especially when I was thinking about accounting services, it would be like, what do you have now? But also like, how do you see yourself in 12 months? I think both of those things are important, because if you automate too late, you're just like wasting money and spending time down the road when you probably should instead be thinking about expansion or raising capital, right? So I think it's important to think about yourself both. I'm a million dollar business today, but if we hit our very realistic goals, we'll be a $4 million business by the end of the year, something along those lines. Strike a balance in between those numbers. You know, I think someone that is a $1 million business is okay with a bookkeeper. I think that bookkeeper getting some automation bolted on would be a few hundred dollars a month. That's kind of how I would think about it for that level.
Yeah, it's not like it's a crazy investment where they're like, okay, I got to dump $100,000 into building my own app and doing all this other stuff.
No, shouldn't.
Like the money opinion, feels like the question that I want to ask is, besides the money, right? I think what Tom talked about sitting around, he literally said sitting around and dreaming up what you might want and bringing in an expert, right? Talking to someone like you, Steve, mm-hmm. in that conversation with, hey, where do I want to take this? Right. Like it's one thing to sit around by yourself, not being an expert on what the outputs need to be. But if you have somebody who's going to help you think, you know, a real professional that's going to help you think, what do I want to get out of my books? It makes it a lot easier to prioritize and deprioritize, you know, accounting system priorities. And it need not be expensive. I'm thinking you need to invest the time up front, the willingness to get your hands dirty with the process instead of going straight to the corner office.
Yeah. So to speak. I agree. No, I agree. And I think there's huge opportunity in the space. Like I know it because I've lived this world. I've been a CFO of a company, but I've also like advised a lot of companies. So I've been on both sides of the equation. If companies can automate, if they can free up time, find that margin that I'm talking about, oh my gosh, there's so much upside. Like, you'll make so much more money by freeing up somebody's time to look at the numbers, do analysis, change pricing, look for cost efficiencies, than you're going to make trying to save money by not investing in it. That's what I always say. I think the key thing for CEOs to be weary of is, you know, if you're trying to get your FinOps team to come with, to you with a proposal for automation, they may actually sabotage the process because they're thinking, well, I got to protect John's job over here. You know, like if we automate journal entry, that's what he does. I mean, we're not going to need John. I like John, but I think we got to get rid of this whole like fear mentality of like, oh, I'm going to get replaced. I always say, yeah, that's great. Like, you should always be looking for ways to replace yourself so you can step up and then take on higher value activities within the business. And so therefore, I don't know, the last thoughts on that, just as far as roadblocks or people sabotaging the whole automation process.
Automation's coming. And this is a line that I hear a lot of people use, but automation is not going to replace accountants. Accountants that use automation are going to replace those that don't, right? Yeah. That automation is not coming for your job, but if you don't get on board, a different accountant who knows automation is going to come in and take your job. So, you know, use it to your advantage. Build a new skill, right? That's how I always liked that. That's how I got into it. This is a fun and exciting way. I'll be honest. I didn't love being an accountant. I didn't love being an auditor. And I was like, this is a path out. Great. I would love to learn this. Plus, you know, I think coding and automation is fun. It's exciting. It's sexy at times, like compared to just doing number crunching. So embrace it, you know?
Agree.
I think, you know, replace yourself rather than having someone else replace you to take control of the conversation. You know, when I look at my career and what I know of Tom's career, I think those are the secrets to the success, certainly that I had in terms of making more time for, you know, Steve, as you said, stepping up. Yeah. Right? Like, yeah, it's about, hey, if you can automate this and still do your job well, if you can do your 40-hour job in 4 hours a week, that's a lot of time that you either made for yourself to check email or go to the gym or build something better.
Or yeah. Start FinOptimal.
Or start FinOptimal. Exactly.
That's literally what Jesse did.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. All right, Tom, Jesse, it's been great having you on the show and having this conversation. I really appreciate it. A lot of good information out there for the listeners. If you want to learn more about Jesse and Tom and what they're up to, if you go to BYFIQ.com, which stands for Boosting Your Financial IQ, there'll be a guest page. Check them out. There'll be links so you can connect with them. You can learn more about FinOptimal and how you could get started down this path as well. So yeah, thanks again for being on the show and for everybody tuning in. Until next episode, take care of yourself. Cheers.
Hey, real quick, if you get value out of this podcast, it would mean the world to me if you would leave us a review. Also, if you want to be featured on the show, send me a recording with your name, your age, where you're from, and your question through a voice note or a video using your smartphone. Then email me the file at hello@byfiq.com. BYFIQ stands for Boosting Your Financial IQ. So once again, it's hello@byfiq.com. If selected, I'll give you a shout out and answer your question for you and the entire community. One last thing, if you want access to additional resources that will help you fast track your path to financial freedom, visit byfiq.com or download our free app in the Apple or Google Play App Store today. Thanks again.